What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And a happy Friday, everybody. Welcome in Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, the game streaming all around the world on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe hanging out. Darren McFarland is on vacation. Willie Donick will be along in just a second. And Elijah Campbell in the ones and twos at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. And I do believe we have Willie D at his home studio. Willie, what's happening?
Good morning, Chase. How are you?
You know, I'm feeling good. I am feeling good today. It's a July 4th weekend. I saw a picture a few minutes ago that almost brought a tear to my eye, and that was the beautiful Truist Park, and there were players walking onto the field, getting ready for summer camp. So the Braves are ready to go.
I saw some footage yesterday on MLB Network of some of the teams that were working out. It was a simulated game at Yankee Stadium. Garrett Cole was hitting 95 to 99 on the gun. So I guess he's ready. I guess
he's feeling it.
Good chance he'll be ready.
He's feeling it. Yeah. I watched that too. It was, last night, I guess, with, Matt Vasgersian and Harold Reynolds and I think Ron Darling that were talking about that. And they showed the footage in a t-shirt and everything, just hit 95 on the gun.
Yeah. So they've been working out. I think that's the thing to remember. I am curious to see how many pitchers are ready to go at least five innings the first time they take the mound. Tom Glavine, because I think the Braves have been one that have come out, especially with their young pitchers, and said, you know, the first couple of times through the rotation, they're only going to throw three or four innings. I would guess that different pitchers have had different types of training, different amounts of throwing through this period of time. So I wonder how many will be ready to go five or six and how many teams just don't feel like they've got it. They don't want to take any chances like that.
Yeah, and that's just – I mean, that's something they're going to have to figure out, you know, early on. But if Garrett Cole is any indication, then I think they'll be okay. So it – and I know you can't say that about every team. There's going to be some that probably haven't been doing the things that he's been doing. But I know it was good to see if you're a Yankees fan – see that kind of, you know, prep that had been going into getting ready for the season. So I'm just glad that I'm glad that summer camp is underway, whatever you want to call it.
Yes. And, that is a welcome sight. And meanwhile, the waiting game continues for the NHL, but it does look like they continue to work out the final details. And, I know today we're going to discuss a little bit of some of the details of what will be announced once this thing is ready to go, but we're all on pins and needles just waiting for it to be final. But again, it's nice to see guys working out in the same kind of fashion the baseball players are. We're getting closer.
There's some news out of our nation's capital too, Willie. Jacina Anderson just putting out there, I'm told the Washington organization now plans to, quote, undergo a thorough review of the team's name, end quote, per source, the team will announce. I think how I interpret that is the Washington Redskins are changing their name. That's what I think is going to happen.
I think you're right. And wasn't it FedEx that came out and said you can't play here under that name? Isn't that what they put out there yesterday?
Well, I don't know if it was exactly that. They were encouraging Dan Snyder that, hey, it's time, and basically they've requested that they change the name. I don't know if it's necessarily that you can't play there. Now, what you may be referring to is so that deal runs through 2025 with FedEx Field that they currently have. They want to build a new stadium where RFK is right now. And officials have said, well, that deal may not happen if you don't change the name and building a new stadium where RFK is. So they want to move back to that site, even though, I mean, FedEx Field's what, 20 years old? Is it? How old is FedEx Field?
It's a little over 20. I want to say it was mid-90s when they moved there.
But it's in
maybe
Virginia.
Maybe 93, 94.
And RFK, is RFK actually in D.C.?
I believe so. It's right there. I've been to a baseball game there before the Nationals' new park was open. I got a chance to see them play at RFK. It looks a lot like the old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. Yeah. So many of those stadiums that were built around the same time have a very similar look, just a donut, basically. I guess it's still standing, but it's in more of a it's in a neighborhood. It's not right downtown in D.C. Right. It's got more of a neighborhood setting to it, and so I don't know. I mean, it's been a while since I've been there, but
FedEx is in.
That's
Maryland.
Something to watch. But I do think that this would go a long way to how that franchise looks, because let's be honest, they love to talk about the tradition of the quote unquote Redskins, and at one time it was a very proud tradition in terms of their results on the field.
Yeah.
But the last, I don't know how many, I mean, it's been a long time since they've been really relevant on the field anyway. So now's as good a time as any to do the right thing. I think here, let's look at the statement, because Dan Snyder usually has been the first guy to deflect and challenge openly anybody that wanted to bring this argument to the table. He fought it. He fought it very hard. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, because he wanted to keep the tradition alive and all of that.
Yeah. So here's his statement. This is a little bit of a different tone. This process allows the team to take into account not only the proud tradition and history of the franchise, but also input from our alumni, the organization, sponsors, the NFL,
ding, ding, ding.
And the local community in its proud to represent on and off the field. Ron Rivera came out with this. This issue is of personal importance to me, and I look forward to working closely with Dan Snyder to make sure we continue the mission of honoring and supporting Native American and our military. We believe this review can and will be conducted with the best interest of all in mind. So not a promise to change, but I do sense a different tone this go around than the last go around.
So I'm asking this question, like, this is I'm literally asking for somebody to tell me, okay, would this be a good change or not? So I read in the last hour, Elijah and I talked about this, and there was a site that had some mock-ups of uniforms and some names that people had submitted of possibly changing the name to. One was the Washington Warriors that still pays homage to, you know, the look and go. Remember the Arrowhead logo they had?
Yeah.
Back in the, was that the 90s, the 80s or the 90s that they had that? Would that be an okay change, or is that still on the tiptoeing on the line of where they're trying to get away from?
It depends on who you ask. I look at the Seminoles, right, for Florida State. They did a very deep, thorough search when the NCAA, I can't remember exactly what year this was, Chase, but there was a big push by the NCAA, and they did something similar to what they did to the state of Mississippi. They basically said, if you have a logo that is offensive in any way to Native Americans, you will not be able to host NCAA championships. And a lot of people changed the logo. Some fought it.
Right.
The Seminoles down at Florida State, they went to great lengths to, because I think this is what they've said all along, is that they have a relationship with the actual Seminoles, right? The long-standing group of Native Americans who occupied that, or, you know, lived in that area for a long, long time.
Yeah, because that's a tribe. And that's an actual.
And they were okay with it. You know, they celebrated it. They got the okay, basically.
Yeah.
To keep it. Others changed. You know, for hockey, the University of North Dakota, the Fighting Sioux.
Fighting Sioux, yep.
They went to great lengths to keep their nickname. And basically said, you know, we are not changing. They fought it tooth and nail. So I don't know. I mean, I think you get into that category, and in this day and time, all these things are coming up for discussion again. I do wonder if, you know, if there will be a similar discussion of any kind. There is one going on in Chicago with the Blackhawks. right now. So I think if you're going to change it, I would think you would change it to something that leaves nothing to chance like that. Although, you know, I think there would be an argument to be made of, you know, if you modify it and, you know, it's more sensitive, but you keep sort of the same look, then maybe there'd be an argument for that to be a compromise. I don't know. It could go a lot of different ways.
Well, I mean, you can make the same, like the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay, they use an Arrowhead as their logo. They play at Arrowhead Stadium. They're called the Chiefs. You know, what do people think about that? The Braves. Now, you know, the Braves, you can take that name and you can apply that to different, I think you can make that work in different ways if they needed to change something, but their main logo is a tomahawk. They do the tomahawk chop just like Florida State, even though they've talked about scaling some of that back. So where is the line, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I think we know the line wherever it is drawn. Redskins is on the other side of the line.
No, and that, I completely
that's
agree.
So this is the start, right? And then from there, I think you really have some discussions that are layered and difficult. And to be honest, I don't know how far they would take it with some of them. But I think it would be left up to each franchise to decide, you know, because your brand and your image is one that's been there for a long, long time in the case of Blackhawks and things like that. But you do want to hear what what people feel about it. And there are Native American communities that do find it offensive, right?
Sure.
And so that is first and foremost the people to consult. And so it's not a huge group in Chicago, but it's a group, right? And they, for a while, they had a sort of a partnership, and then the leadership changed in the local area up there. There was a recent article in The Athletic you could read about it. But the current leader is like, we don't want to associate with them, you know. And this is a big hockey fan, right? This woman who's quoted extensively in the article says, I love the team, I love hockey, but I don't like the nickname, and it offends me. So where do you go from there?
And I get that. One thing that's, as I've looked at some names that people have submitted, my friend Katie says, call them the Potato Skins and have TGI Fridays be a corporate sponsor. So that kind of made me laugh.
So you could still call them the Skins.
Right, exactly. I saw Pigskins, you know, because they have the hogs, the whole thing, and call them the Pigskins.
Which would be very offensive to pigs.
Yeah, it would. They would not be happy about that. But the thing that kind of that I was thinking about, Dan Snyder has such an ego. Wouldn't he want to make his own history and his own legacy by rebranding? Wouldn't that just be right up his alley, though, to say, hey, you know what? Now that I can really make this mine. And, you know, come up with whatever name he wants. I feel like that would be that's the way to get him to do it. Be like, hey, come on, Dan. I mean, this is, you can really make this yours now. And it's almost like you trick him into thinking it's his idea.
You know, another thing you could do is you can keep the colors, right? Where the uniforms, you know, still have the same colors. And maybe that keeps a connection, you know, a thread through the history part of it, and you're just changing the nickname itself. And obviously you'd have to change the logo to some degree, but the colors could stay the same.
Yeah, you could keep the colors the same. You just got to change. And even with the Blackhawks, they could hypothetically keep the name and just change the logo or just become the Hawks. But yeah, you know, I think it's a little easier with them. Redskins, the name is offensive. The logo is offensive. So
here are two
everything.
Candidates. I'm looking at a lot of people are tweeting about this right now. Red Tails, in honor of the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yep.
Hawks. So
what was that? You broke up.
The Hogs would be you know, a big theme from the past. The offensive linemen that were known back in the heyday. And so you could do pigskins with that. So
I was wondering Hogs, where that name had come from, the Hogs, because I didn't really know.
Well, they had a great offensive line in the 80s And that's what they were called. They called them the Hogs. In fact, one of them ended up being, and I'm trying to remember his name off the top of my head. I don't know why I'm going blank, but he ended up being the
Russ Grimm.
Offensive line coach. Russ Grimm for the Titans.
Yep. He was good. I kind of wish they had kept him because I liked Russ Grimm.
Yep. They won three Super Bowls, 82, 87, and 91. And I don't know if they're – they weren't all there for all three, but a good number of them were there for that whole stretch.
Joe Gibbs.
Or at least most of it. Joe Gibbs, yeah.
A three-time Super Bowl winning coach and I think a five-time NASCAR champion. It's been quite successful.
So that it's a good lead-in because we talk about the Redskins issue with Chris Broussard, and we had a fantastic conversation with him yesterday, so we want to play that for you. A lot of you may not have heard that because we had it later in the show yesterday, or earlier in the show. That's coming up at 11. Tom Glavine will talk to us today, and we've got a special NASCAR guest coming up at 12:30. I know we're really looking forward to.
Dale Jarrett, who is the 1999 Cup Series champion. He's now with NBC Sports. This weekend is a historic weekend. It's not Indy 500 weekend, but it's I think they call it the Indy Grand Prix at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So the Indy cars are going to run Saturday. The Cup Series will run on the Oval on Sunday. It's the first IndyCar NASCAR doubleheader weekend. And so that's going to be a lot of fun. He is going to be a part of that coverage at the Indy Motor Speedway alongside Mike Tirico. So it'll be fun to talk to him coming up at 12:30. Plus we have trivia. We have You Just Made the List, our usual.
Yeah, get
Friday
the trivia ready. I want people to get mentally ready now for what's going to happen at 1 o'clock. It is going to be, a big time holiday weekend extravaganza. I mean, it's going to be part of your holiday weekend. When you look back on your 4th of July weekend in 2020, you're going to say, you know what? We got it started right by participating in the trivia contest on 102.5 The Game. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Exactly. So it's going to be a fun show. Looking forward to it. Am I taking?
All right. When we come back, go ahead. I thought you were, but I will if you like.
I don't know what we're doing here. When we come back, you mentioned Tom Glavine. We caught up with him yesterday. Had a very good conversation. So you will hear that in case you missed it because it was later in the show. We'll talk to Hall of Famer Tom Glavine when we come back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, the game streaming on the Game Nashville app. If you missed our conversation yesterday with Hall of Famer Tom Glavine, then you're going to want to stick around and listen to this because he brought a lot of stuff about what's going on in Major League Baseball right now, told some stories. Here's our conversation with the lefty, Tom Glavine.
Well, you may have heard Tom Glavine with a good in-depth conversation with Chase a few weeks ago on our Game Night Facebook Live feature that we've been doing, but he joins us here on the show, and we're excited that we're keeping our fingers crossed that we're going to have the baseball get going later this month. The guy's back at the spring training sites, if you want to call him that. Tom, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. How you guys doing?
We're hanging in there. We hope we're inching closer to seeing some games here. And let's start with this, Tom. When I think about you as a pitcher, one of your greatest attributes, of course, was just taking the ball, for 35 starts year after year after year. This is going to be so unique, for those grinders who really, make their mark with consistency over a long period of time. How would you approach a season like this year where you would make, approximately 12 starts? How would it change how you approach the game?
I think it just changes it in the sense that, early on, you're going to be limited as to the amount of innings you're going to be able to pitch. And that's just a fact. So, I think your mindset is a little bit different when you know, okay, I've probably got three or four innings in me today versus going out there and thinking about just pitching a game and trying to win a game. How I would go about my business would be the same. In terms of preparation and things like that, but I do think there's a little bit different mentality when you take the mound knowing, okay, I'm probably only going to go three or four innings today versus, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to try and go as deep into the game as I can, hopefully seven or eight innings. So I just think it mentally it's just going to be a little bit of an adjustment for guys.
I've read some of what the Braves approach, and this it sounds like a lot of teams might be taking this approach, especially with some young arms that they have, that you know they're not going to push them too much. But what's your understanding of how they will deploy, you know, some of these guys like Soroka that they have that are on the rise, but you know obviously this is a unique year.
Well, I mean, I think on the one hand, sure, you're going to be careful with guys on the front end, but I think for the Braves, or at least a team like the Braves, the shortness of the season makes them not have to worry about those young guys on the back end. You know, I think in a 162-game schedule, you know, you are going to get to a point in September with those younger guys where, yeah, they're going to start getting concerned about innings. In this scenario, obviously, they're not going to have to do that, but they are going to have to be careful with things on the front end. You know, the last thing you want to start doing is overextending guys early. Because let's face it, you got a pitcher that gets hurt and he goes on the 14-day DL. Well, you've just missed a big chunk of the season. So you certainly don't want to do that. But I think that initially you're going to see guys go out there, probably go three or four innings, you know, 45 to 50, 60 pitches somewhere in there early on. And then I think each time, similar to what you would probably see in spring training, you probably extend a guy by 15 or 20 pitches each time he goes out. And then after about three or four starts, you probably take the reins off and just let guys go. But obviously on the front end, yeah, you want to be careful that, you know, you're not extending a guy too much. I mean, I think the difficult things are going to be, you know, if you start getting into situations where some of your starters early on get, you know, maybe into an inning and, you know, they got two outs and a runner on, and you really want to try and milk them through an inning and not have to waste, you know, bring a reliever in for one out in an inning. And then the next thing you know, then that guy gets on, and now you're trying to milk one more out again. And, you know, that's how you get into situations where you can certainly overextend guys. So I think managers are going to be really cautious about that kind of stuff.
Tom Glavine is with us. And, Tom, I listened to a discussion that Jason Stark was leading on his podcast about how the starting pitcher over the years has been a little bit de-emphasized. And now you have, you know, some extreme situations where a team might start a reliever just for an inning or two and then flip it and have more of a committee approach. And they were talking about ways that maybe you could, you know, get some more value on the starting pitcher. So we have those great matchups, Tom Glavine against Doug Drabek. You know, when you look in the newspaper of, you know, who the starting pitchers were, that was exciting. It's been de-emphasized some. It's still an extremely important facet of the game. But is there anything that could be done to maybe increase that aspect of the game?
Yeah, put more of an emphasis on starting pitchers getting better and having to pitch deeper into ball games. It's that simple. You know, I think every generation there have been changes in how that generation has been brought up to play the game, so to speak. You know, I know even in my generation, you know, we were, you know, making 35 starts a year. We were pitching 200 and something innings a year and you know, all that stuff. But to the generation before us, that wasn't enough. You know, those guys were in four-man rotations making 40 starts a year, pitching 300-something innings a year. There was no pitch count. So, you know, to me, the what you're getting out of your pitchers is what you're asking of them, right? So I was brought up in an era where we had five-man rotations, we had pitch counts, and we had those limitations, so to speak. I think the limitations have gotten even more stringent on today's pitchers. You know, guys don't make 35 starts anymore. You don't have too many guys going 200 innings anymore. Guys don't go deep into the game anymore, you know, because they're being told they can't flip a lineup for the third time. And my question is always, well, why not? You know, what are you doing at the minor league level to teach these guys to do that? And I think it's being lost. And it's, you know, so much of, you know, analytics are a good thing. Obviously, you can learn some things from analytics, but I think that's where analytics have gone too far. Is that now it's almost automatic that you're not going to let your starting pitcher, you know, go flip a lineup for a third time, pitch in the sixth inning or the seventh inning of a tight ball game. You know, and if you don't allow these guys to do it, then they're never going to do it. They're never going to learn how to do it. So I just think simplistically, you place a greater emphasis on your starting pitchers being able to go deeper into ball games, and you do that at the minor league level. You teach them how to do it. But you know, you can't expect them to not do it at the minor league level, come to the big league level and do it. So, I mean, it's one of those things that I'm not a huge fan of. There are obviously some great pitchers in baseball, you know, and the Jake DeGroms and Max Scherzers of the world. But unfortunately, it seems like we've gotten to the point where you either have those handful of elite pitchers and then a hodgepodge of mediocrity past those guys. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, if we could just get to the point where you emphasize the importance of your starting pitcher and your starting pitcher going deep and learning how to flip lineups, learning how to get guys out multiple mm-hmm. ways during the course of the game, then you would get more of that at the big league level, but it has to start at the minor league level.
We're talking to Tom Glavine, the Hall of Famer, of course, analyst for the Atlanta Braves as well. So let's talk about the Atlanta Braves in a 60-game season. I mean, we know the young pitchers, we know the veteran pitchers they brought in, and what that lineup looks like. When you read a lot of the experts, obviously people are going to trend towards the Dodgers, and rightfully so, but I feel like the Braves are built for this type of run, and it's going to be more wide open just because of the shorter season. So how do you view the Braves and what that team looks like going into a 60-game season?
I agree with you. I think they're built for this because in this scenario, particularly with the way your starting pitchers are going to be limited on the front end of the season, the Braves are built for that because their bullpen was structured that way anyway. You know, you look at the Braves, and I think everybody would tell you their bullpen is going to be a strong point. Now, obviously, if the better their starting pitchers are and take pressure off of their bullpen on a nightly basis, then the better off everybody's going to be. But, you know, this is a team that clearly if they have the lead in the sixth inning, they've got a bullpen that's designed to, okay, here we go, and you're going to run guys out there. And I think in this scenario we're going to see early on, you know, again, they're built for that. You're going to see that. So I think that certainly helps them. I think the delay has allowed Cole Hamels to get healthy, so that's going to be a big thing for them. And like I say, on the back end, you're not going to have to worry about your starting pitchers, particularly the young guys, and an innings load. So I think all those things are certainly positive on the Braves side. Now, are there question marks? Sure. You know, in a situation like this, you know, who knows how anybody's going to react, really, but how are the younger guys going to react to the pressure of knowing, okay, we've only got a 60-game schedule, we can't afford to get off to a bad start. You know, I can't afford to go in a slump as a hitter. I can't afford to go in a slump as a pitcher. It's the kind of thing where you hear this cliche all the time, you know, you're not going to win the season in a normal season. You're not going to win the season in the first month of the year, but you sure can take yourself out of it. Well, that's really magnified now in this situation, and you could arguably break it down to, you know, a 10-day or a 2-week drought could take you out of everything. So there's going to be a premium on teams going out and getting off to a good start, and I think from a Braves perspective, it's going to be interesting to see how the younger players on that team react to that pressure of knowing, hey, we got to get out and get off to a hot start.
As a National League pitcher, you spent your entire career in the National League. Obviously, you hit, and that was a part of playing in the NL. So now with the DH being universal, at least for just this year, what are your thoughts on that?
It's twofold. I mean, number one, I understand it for this year. I get it. I think looking further ahead, I think that people are going to have to view this as a trial balloon, because the conversations about a universal DH in baseball are becoming more and more, and I understand that. You know, I would not have liked it as a player But I have to be honest with you, in today's game, the hitting by the pitchers has gotten so abysmal that I'm probably more open to the conversation now. I mean, there are very few guys in the National League, it seems, as pitchers that really can help themselves with the bat. And when they do, it's painfully obvious that they're able to do those things. And when a guy can't, that's equally painfully obvious. So I just feel like because the hitting for so many pitchers has gotten so bad that, you know, I'm more open to seeing the DH. You know, I certainly believe the argument that it helps prolong some guys' careers because you see it in the American League. And we've seen some great hitters, some Hall of Fame hitters, extend their career, as designated hitters. So, I mean, I get all that and I understand that, but I can promise you if I was playing, I would not have liked it because I loved hitting. I thought it was a big part of the game. And I always felt like with our teams and our pitchers, the way they handle the bat, we always had an advantage over the opposing team's pitchers in handling the bat. So I wouldn't have liked it.
Also, as a pitcher, how do you feel about this extra inning rule where they're going to have a runner on second? Full disclosure, I hate it. I don't like it, but I understand they're doing different things this year. But what are your thoughts on it?
Again, I think this is another one that people are going to have to view with an open mind because this is another thing that baseball has been talking about doing for years. Look, as a player, I didn't love extra innings, obviously, but I'm not sure how I would have liked that. As a broadcaster, I'm all for anything to get the game over faster. I don't like 18-inning games. So from that standpoint, I'm a little bit more open-minded to it. But it's going to be interesting to see how it affects the game or you know, what people's reaction is to it. I mean, look, baseball's been in this constant struggle of trying to, you know, find ways for the game to be offensive and interesting and at the same time faster. And it's a really hard formula to try and master because obviously the more runs you're scoring, then the longer the games are going to take. And that's certainly been a big issue for baseball. The extra innings certainly don't help the interest in the game any. You know, for the purist, an extra inning ball game is exciting. For me, when I was a kid, if I went to a game, I wanted extra innings. It's like, hey, free baseball. This is great. I get to stay longer. But I think the makeup of today's fan is different. And, you know, they're not looking for the 3.5-hour game or the 18-inning game. I mean, everybody now wants instant satisfaction and gratification. So I think if this helps to determine an outcome in the game sooner, then it's probably not a bad thing for baseball overall.
Tom, you are a 2-time Cy Young winner, and we all know that over the course of a 162-game season, winning those individual awards, how difficult they are. It's a unique situation. We all know that. But how do you think they should recognize the individual performances this year, knowing that you're not playing the full season, so the Cy Young or whatever is going to – I don't know if you put an asterisk next to it or you just don't do it at all, but how do you think they should handle that?
You know, I mean, I think you handle it. I guess I'm of the mindset that you handle it like you always do. You know, everybody's playing under the same rules. So, you know, why delegitimize a guy who had the best year in a 60-game schedule? You know, that's the rules that everybody's playing under. So I don't see the need for an asterisk. Now, does it open the door for guys maybe to win those awards that probably otherwise wouldn't? Yeah, of course it does. Absolutely it does. You know, I had an interesting conversation with another radio station the other day, and this conversation kind of came up as it relates to the likelihood now of a relief pitcher winning a Cy Young Award. And you know what? It's probably more viable under this scenario because your starting pitchers, if they get 12 starts, unless they've changed the rule that I'm not aware of, to where you still have to go 5 innings to qualify for a win, you got to figure starting pitchers are going to lose at least 2 opportunities to go at least 5 innings. So now you're down to 10 games. And what's the likelihood of a starting pitcher running out, you know, and getting an 8-2 or or some kind of record like that, it's probably pretty slim. But the likelihood of a reliever getting more opportunities to go out there and save games is probably going to be higher. Their opportunities are probably going to be more. So you might see a guy go out and rip off 30 saves in a season. So I think those kind of scenarios are a little bit more likely. But again, I still feel like everybody's playing under the same rules. So whoever emerges as, you know, the Cy Young Award winner or the MVP under those rules, you know, they've earned it because that's what everybody's playing under.
Tom Glavine with us. Tom, as we let you go, I know you always have a special part in your heart for the game of hockey and your background. I did want to ask, I don't think I've ever had a chance to ask you this. Tom Fitzgerald, as you know, was the first captain of the Predators, and we had many conversations with him back in the day about he was growing up. You're a couple years older than him, but he enjoyed watching you. He knew all about you growing up in the same town, Billerica, Mass. How well do you know Tom? Did you play with him at all growing up, or was he too young for you guys to cross paths much?
Yeah, no, he was too young. So, I mean, I obviously played against him a little bit and knew of him as, you know, I kind of got out of hockey and obviously he was continuing on in high school and then college and then ultimately on to professional hockey. So, you know, we got to know each other a little bit after that, a little bit better. And, you know, we talked from time to time. You know, he had a son at Boston College. The same time I had my daughter was at Boston College. So, you know, we would have that in common. And, you know, once he moved through his playing days and into the front office, you know, I would pick his brain a little bit here and there about some things. So, you know, I would say we've gotten to know each other more since I've gotten done playing hockey and kind of followed his hockey career. But, you know, great story. I mean, certainly a good player, a grinder, one of those guys that got everything out of his talent, but really, really did a nice job and made a good mark in the game of hockey in the front office.
He's a great guy. And we're certainly hoping he gets the permanent GM job in New Jersey. That would be great for him. He's very deserving of it. So, Tom, thanks a lot for joining us. As always, great insight, great talking baseball with you, and looking forward to later this month seeing some action.
Yeah, me too. I appreciate the time, guys, and have a good day.
Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Hope you enjoyed that baseball conversation with Tom Glavine. As always, very insightful. Now we turn our attention to the NHL. We want to get you up to date on what the latest is on the return to play. We know that the work has been going on the last couple of days at Bridgestone Arena. The guys getting back on the ice in small groups, trying to target the resumption of the summer training camp leading up to the resumption of play. Now, here is what is going on. Bob McKenzie from TSN has been all over this. He was on TSN this morning, and this is, I think, the most comprehensive, and it's done in a very compact amount of time, it's synopsis of what's going on. They haven't announced anything officially yet. As we know, and we've been telling you the last couple of days, it looks like Edmonton and Toronto are the hub cities, and it looks like Nashville will be headed to Edmonton with the Western Conference teams for their qualifying series against the Coyotes. But when is it going to happen? What are the target dates? Let's let you listen to Bob McKenzie from TSN, and he will spell out a lot of these target dates all the way through the end of the season, and then, in theory, the draft and the resumption of next season. Pay attention.
News has been breaking on an almost daily basis, and the man breaking most of that news is our very own hockey insider, Bob McKenzie. All right, Bob, what's the latest on all the negotiations and the return to play?
Well, Gino, as we speak, the negotiations between the National Hockey League, the National Hockey League Players Association, are continuing, and they are trying to finalize today, if possible, and I believe there's a legitimate chance that could happen. They're trying to finalize a tentative agreement, not only on the Phase 3 opening up of training camps, but also the Phase 4 playing games and all those return-to-play protocols, as well as the whole new collective bargaining agreement extension on top of transition rules and critical dates going forward. Massive amount of information to process. And if they get it signed off on here, I would expect a joint announcement from the NHL and NHLPA, and that would allow them then to begin the ratification process. For the players, that might take 2 or 3 days, so it might be early next week before the players and the Board of Governors have signed off on this. And as we've reported earlier, Toronto and Edmonton are fully expected to be the hub cities for this event. There's a strong belief that Edmonton would get the Stanley Cup final portion of this, but that's not 100% locked down just yet. So we'll see what the next hours and days bring on that front.
All right, Bob, then let's assume we do get an agreement signed off in the next few days. Give us a sense of a timeline on how you see this all unfolding.
Well, keeping in mind, everything with this is super tentative. I mean, this has been, I've been through collective bargaining negotiations over and over again, but nothing's been as fluid where things change minute to minute, hour to hour, day to day. And if the NHL and PA feel like they need to push the targeted or tentative dates back, they will push them back with impunity as necessary. But let's look at what the starting framework for this could look like. July 13th, beginning of phase three, that's when they would want the players to report to camp. July 26th or thereabouts, the teams would leave their home cities and go to the two hubs, Toronto and Edmonton, for the beginning of phase four on August 1st. Now, keep in mind, the first part of phase four is the preliminary or play-in qualifier best of five series. And remember, the losers of that series go into the draft lottery, and the draft lottery is scheduled to happen when that playoff qualifier is over. So on or around August 10th, 11th, thereabouts, we could get the draft lottery and determine the number one overall pick in this year's draft. And then you've got, in early October, the Stanley Cup being presented. Again, it's a target date. That's what they would like to have happen. The NHL draft would need to happen quickly after the Stanley Cup has been presented. And right now, November 1st would be the first day of the new business year for the 2021 season. And that would be free agent frenzy day, the day after Halloween, Gino, if everything stays to plan.
All right, getting back to the awarding of the Stanley Cup, be it in Edmonton or even in Toronto. Either way, if all goes according to plan, this will be the first time the Cup is awarded on Canadian ice since the Boston Bruins celebrated in Vancouver.
Wow.
That's Bob McKenzie from TSN earlier today. So, to my knowledge, Chase, that is the first real look at the timeline, the tentative timeline. Yeah. And we stress that it is tentative. And it, obviously, with everything we do these days, it's got to be flexible and movable. But let's go through the dates and maybe how they affect the Predators. July 13th is now the target to actually start training camp. And July 26th, on or about, you would go to the bubble. And in this case, for the Predators, they would go to Edmonton.
Right. Yeah, so that's and that's kind of putting it, and I know we're going to get to this, but August, the 1st of August is when they actually start playing games. That's something that we've brought up several times on the show as you try and put, you know, do the math and realize, okay, how long do they need to get ready to resume the season? They need about 3 weeks or so. So that would put everything on target. But, yeah, that's when they would head to Edmonton for targeting around August 1st to get games underway. So, again, they have to ratify all this. They have to agree. But you heard Bob there, and Bob's been all over this, Bob McKenzie. I was reading through his tweets this morning as he does his update, you know, many, many times a day of just how close they are. But those dates seem to fit with some things we've been talking about the last few weeks.
And I think it gives you some wiggle room as well if you did have to delay the start, because what they're trying to do is crown, and let's go through them again. By the August 10th, you hope to have the qualifying round over. In other words, you have your 16-team field ready for the playoffs, and the eight teams that are eliminated then go into the draft lottery, so you could hold the lottery right around August 10th. Then you know who has the first pick, and that will be a big day. A big consolation prize for one of the eight teams that loses. Of course, the Predators have to try to avoid being in that group of eight. They're trying to beat the Coyotes, but the loser of that series would be in that group. They want to crown the champion sometime in early October. And then the new league year, which would mean free agency, would be November 1st. Man. And I would imagine that gives you a little bit of a cushion, right? If you had to push back a week, the start, or maybe even 2 weeks, as long as you're done by mid to late October, I would assume you could still get to free agency on November 1st, even if you had to push it back to November 5th or something like that. Oh, by the way, the other thing that has to happen between the two is to actually hold the draft. So right. You heard him say, like, basically as soon as the Stanley Cup is awarded, within a couple of days after that, they will hold the draft.
Yeah, so November 1st, let's just focus on that for a second, would be the day after Halloween. That would be free agent frenzy. For those of you in this city, the Titans coming off the bye head to Cincinnati on that same day because that is a Sunday. That would be a wild day here in Nashville, talking about Predators free agency, what's going to happen there. And then, oh, by the way, the Titans midway through their season, if everything goes to plan, taking on the Bengals and the number one overall pick, Joe Burrow.
And in theory, right around that time would be the end of the World Series if they can finish that.
True.
And, you know, that's a big if. But
NBA free agency, we know be around then?
The NBA hasn't announced their timeline, but I would have to imagine it's going to be similar, right? Because they tend to be, everything that we're hearing seems to fall in line, at least closely, with it. And I think what we've been told all along is the two leagues have been very open in communications on protocols and things like that. So, yeah, I don't know the exact dates, but, yeah, you know, October is always a crazy sports month, and let's just keep our fingers crossed that this one is just as crazy.
Yeah, and whew, I mean, we're so starved for sports that the, you know, I'm of the just hook this into my veins, let's go. I'm ready. Sports overload. I think it's going to be fun. I think once this if this all gets underway and goes as planned, all of the sports that we're going to be consuming over the next few months, I mean, it's going to make up for the first half of 2020 and losing what we did, because it's going to be every day you're going to have something to watch.
Every day, and, you know, October has always been one of my, maybe my favorite sports month to begin with, but now you are, in theory, going to crown champions in three leagues,
yeah,
right? NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball, if they can pull this off, while you have, you know, football season going on. Again, this is all in our mind. Hope
potentially could MLS around that time.
Yeah, and it all depends on, you know, whether they can resume after they play this tournament in Orlando.
Right.
They haven't really gotten specific on what happens after that. I don't know if there's even a schedule at that point. Maybe they put a tentative one together. I don't know if they've released it.
I don't think they have.
Right now, Nashville SC is still trying to get results of tests so they can get down to Orlando and prepare in the bubble for their game, which is next Wednesday, right? Their first, we got a game Wednesday for,
yep,
Nashville SC.
I believe, unless I missed something that changed, I think they left at 8 o'clock last night. That was one of the
did they, the last thing I saw was that they, you know, they wouldn't be able to leave until they got results
you're right,
of the test.
Okay. No, I missed that. Yeah, so midday, yeah, they're looking midday today. So my mistake.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Wow.
Before you can play, you got to get down there. So right, let's hope everything goes as smoothly as possible. I know there's been, I think it's as a result of waiting to get tests, results from the people that were tested. I think there was one player that, or one person in the party that did test positive. So they're making sure there's not more, something like that.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, this is the process that you have to go through with all of this, so hopefully they get down there today, because I know it's changed several times. It was supposed to be Wednesday, and then it was going to be yesterday, and then last night, and now midday today. So hopefully they get to go. They get to go very, very soon.
Yeah. So remember all the craziness when there's coaching searches or the whole Peyton Manning free agency thing. Everybody was checking the flight tracker. We'll have to see if there's a flight tracker, you know, registered to Nashville SC that lifts off sometime during the show today. So let's hope we can get the boys down there. So there you have it. That's what's going on in terms of some of our sports teams. And I guess I'm hoping in a couple weeks we can actually start breaking down a preview of the series between the Predators and the Coyotes. And when that happens, that'll
nice,
will be a good sign. Right? It'd be nice to actually talk about matchups and you know, who's going where, who's going to start in goal. I mean, there's a lot of – I mean, both teams have two good goalies, right? So both teams will have to decide who to go with, right?
Yep.
And both are right at the top in terms of the toughest decisions. You know, it's pretty easy that Montreal is going to start Carey Price. You know, there are a lot of teams that have two good goalies, but it's a pretty clear choice. I think because of some circumstances, different circumstances for each team, the Predators and the Coyotes have among the difficult choices of any team. And we're talking about a five-game series where the loser of game one is immediately going to be faced with a lot of questions of, do you want to try the other guy in game two, right? So because we know the Predators' story, right? UC Saros was tremendous leading up to the pause of the season. Pekka Rinne got off to a great start and then faltered. For the Coyotes, Darcy Kuemper was playing fantastic hockey, as good as anybody in the league, and then he got hurt, and Antti Raanta came in and did a very, very good job, and I think going into the season, they thought Raanta would be their goalie, but I'm guessing they would go with Darcy Kuemper if healthy, but it's just been a long, long time since he's played a game.
Yeah, I would think that too, but you know, a lot of people might say that they would think the Predators would go with UC Saros, and I don't think you can definitively answer that after this long break. You might get into training camp and realize that Pekka's going to be the way to go, and we've talked about this over and over again that historically Pekka has a, you know, tends to start better than UC Saros. So I think a lot of teams, especially the ones that have those two potential starting goaltenders, they're just going to have to reevaluate once they get into camp.
More on that as this saga unfolds. First things first, according to Bob McKenzie, they're hoping to actually get the guys, get everything agreed to, and training camp would start on or around July 13th. July 10th has been thrown out for a long time. Bob McKenzie introducing July 13th as the day. But still, the target to start games would be August 1st, and that's pretty much been the target all along. When we come back, you're going to hear from Chris Broussard on a lot of different topics. It's a fantastic conversation on many fronts, NBA stories, and we hit on the Redskins situation, which has come to a head today. The Redskins announcing they're going to take a look at it. I don't ever recall them taking this tone when the discussion has come up to change the nickname of the Redskins. Could this be it? Well, we're going to talk about it with Chris Broussard and how the players could influence if they choose. Stay tuned. That's coming up in a moment here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to FinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.